My Classic Album with Mike Norris is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of My Classic Album and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of My Classic Album, the show where we look back on some of the greatest albums in music history. I'm Mike Norris and thanks as always for joining us. A really good episode coming up today, I think you're really going to enjoy it. You know, we've had some heavy hitters on the podcast in the last few weeks, you know, bands that we've never really touched on before, but you know, are some of the biggest bands on the planet in the history of music. Bands like Van Halen, Bon Jovi, AC/DC finally take their place on My Classic Album today. My special guest, Riley Cusort from the Georgia Thunderbolts, a fantastic band. I'm going to talk a little bit more about them shortly, but Riley is going to be joining me. He's chosen AC/DC's international debut, High Voltage, as his classic album. And yeah, it's perfect time to explore AC/DC when, you know, they've not long released Power Up, which seems to be a bit of a return to form for them. The lineup very different between High Voltage and Power Up, but nonetheless still a band that have really powered through over the years, pardon the pun, as relevant now in some ways as they've ever been. But yeah, let's just explore another time. Let's go back to the days of Bon Scott and the Young Brothers and all of that stuff. It's going to be really exciting to talk about that, and I can't wait for you to hear my chat with Riley in just a few minutes. A special thanks to Black Paisley's Stefan Blomqvist for joining me a couple of weeks ago to chat about Bon Jovi's classic album Slippery When Wet. I had a feeling, you know, with it being Bon Jovi, you know, they're one of those bands that are just, they have such universal appeal. I had a feeling a lot of people would check out the episode, and I know that Black Paisley have got a hell of a following too. And, you know, on the first day I upload these, I always like to have a bit of a look and see who's been listening and who's been checking it out. And it just kept going up and up and up, and the visits to the website and everything, shares on social media. It was really exciting. It was fantastic. And by the end of the day, and I put some stuff on the social media pages, basically saying, since we started in 2016, you know, day one of Slippery When Wet with Stefan Blomqvist was kind of the most downloaded day in My Classic Album history. Not just Stefan's episode, but people going right back. I know the Electric Warrior episode with Matthew Hughes got a lot of love and has done since it came out on New Year's Day. Lots of people just checking out the podcast, going back, looking for albums that they like, looking for guests that they like. And that's exactly what it's all about. You know, you don't need to listen to these in order. Pick and choose. Find the albums you want. Find the guests you want. I'm chatting with some pretty exciting people at the moment. I'm really excited once I've had these conversations with people, once I've discussed their classic albums, to let you know who's coming on the podcast. Because now more than ever, it's a really, really exciting time to be listening and to be presenting, producing My Classic Album. So thank you very much for being along for the ride. You know, it's just something I do in my spare time, but at the same time, it's becoming so rewarding, so special. And, you know, having people like Riley and Stefan and Matthew and all these people we're talking about on the show just makes it all the better, you know. So if you want to hear any of our previous episodes, if you want to kind of check out what we're about, previous classic albums that we've covered, get yourself to www.myclassicalbum.co.uk, where you can hear all of our previous episodes right back from 2016, from the previous three seasons. You can also listen to us on any of the major podcasting sites. I've actually had a bit of a play around with the homepage at myclassicalbum.co.uk, and there's links, you know, if you're listening on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts, you know, you can click that link. And of course, for Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network, of which we've been lucky to be a part of for about 3 years now, which is just fantastic to be part of all these really awesome, creative, inventive podcasts, and My Classic Album sits on that page with all of those. So, you know, feel free to check out Podnos, have a bit of an explore. Again, some great podcasts, not necessarily music podcasts, just all sorts of stuff covered over there on Podnos. Of course, we've got our social media channels as well, like our Facebook page. Search for My Classic Album with Mike Norris. Check out our Instagram at My Classic Album Podcast. And if you just want to see essentially retweets of what I put on Instagram, feel free to follow us on Twitter at @MCA_podcast. One day it will be my resolution to master Twitter and work it out, but I'm just not there yet at the moment. But after over 40 episodes of My Classic Album, it's time for us to finally dig in to an AC/DC album. And that album is High Voltage. I'm being joined by Riley Kuzor from the Georgia Thunderbolts in just a little bit. Before we get to my chat with Riley, let's just have a look at the facts. Here's the beginning of what you need to know about High Voltage. High Voltage is the debut international release for Australian rock legends AC/DC. After seeing early success back home in the mid-70s, High Voltage comprised of a compilation of choice cuts of their Australian debut, also named High Voltage, and its follow-up TNT. Both albums were released in 1975, paving the way for the international release from Atlantic Records on the 30th of April, 1976. George Young, brother of guitarists Angus and Malcolm, produced all the tracks on High Voltage, including the title track, which was released as a single in Australia to promote the TNT album. The song reached number 10 on the ARIA charts and also saw success in the UK following the death of lead singer Bon Scott, reaching number 48 in June 1980. Album opener, It's a Long Way to the Top If You Wanna Rock and Roll, reached number 9 in Australia and also proved a posthumous hit in the UK following Bon's passing. The song TNT itself also proved a hit in Australia, charting at number 19, justifying AC/DC's stab at global dominance. High Voltage didn't chart in the UK upon release, but has sold enough to be certified gold, as it did in France, where it also charted at number 7 on their album charts. High Voltage also charted in the US, reaching number 146, but selling enough over the years to hit 3 times platinum certification, starting a run of platinum albums for AC/DC in the US that's lasted for 30 years. As we look back on AC/DC's storied career, High Voltage has been celebrated critically as an important milestone in rock. Classic Rock and Metal Hammer placed High Voltage amongst their 200 greatest albums of the 1970s, while Fast and Bulbous named it amongst its 1,000 best albums of all time in 2015. So that's just the beginning of everything we need to know about High Voltage, and I have here with me my very special guest who chose the album to talk about today on My Classic Album. This is Riley Kuzor from the Georgia Thunderbolts. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I mean, we were just talking before we started here. Obviously, I was saying this is the first AC/DC album that we've done on My Classic Album. Why did you choose High Voltage to talk about on the podcast today?
The reason I chose High Voltage Rock and Roll, or High Voltage, the album from AC/DC, is because that's actually the first album that I ever received by AC/DC, which it's also the first time that you've had AC/DC on your podcast. It's also the first AC/DC album. So it's crazy that it's the first for everything, you know? But my mom, she actually gave me High Voltage when I was around 10 or 11 years old. And I don't know, man, I just wore that album out. She actually bought me Highway to Hell and High Voltage, which one came out in 77, I think, and the other came out in 79. I don't know. It really caught my ear the way that, you know, they can make the music so simple. They can make it sound so simple, like, you know, the drum beats, they're all the same. And the guitars, they're all just, you know, your major power chords. But they just have this mean edge to them, man. Like, it just caught my ear because, you know, Bon Scott's lyrics, it's like he was that rock star, you know, from back in the day. You know, he talked with a swagger that nobody has anymore. You know, like you could tell when he sang, he was about what he was singing, and he was mean, and he was that rock star, you know, that everybody wanted to hang out with and know.
And I know you were saying, obviously, it was your mom, you said, gave you the album when you were 11. What are those memories of hearing High Voltage for the first time? So when you first kind of put that album on, what was that like for you?
When I first put the album on, you know, I really wouldn't. I had been listening to more hair metal music. I mean, 80s rock, you know, like Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue and things like that. So when I first heard the album, you know, it was so different to me because it was just a power driven, just straight in your face, you know, straightforward rock and roll. So I wasn't used to that. You know, I was used to like more technical playing. You know, Slash, he's a great blues player and a great rock and roll player. So when I first heard it, you know, I was like, I don't know about this. But the more that I went through the album, it starts with A Long Way to the Top. I'd actually heard that song before I got the album. I'd heard it at my uncle's house. He used to stay up all night partying, you know, and he'd have one of the movies on there called Family Jewels, AC/DC. It's just a big live rock and roll movie that you can watch, and it's all live recordings of AC/DC. And I've heard the song, It's a Long Way to the Top, if you want to rock and roll. So when I put in the album, you know, that's the first one I'd heard, and I'd heard it 100 times, you know, so I wanted something new. I wanted something different. So I clicked to the next one, and it didn't really catch my ear. Clicked to the next one, didn't really catch my ear. Clicked to the fourth song on this album, which is Livewire. And, dude, I was hooked to that song up until now. I'm fixing to turn 22. You might as well say I'm 22 years old. And that is one of my favorite AC/DC songs of all time. I actually learned the solo the other day in my room, was jamming on it a little bit. You know, later on as I got older, around, I don't know, 19 or 20 years old, I started to listen to the album more. It's just like every song on that album is just crazy good, like crazy lyrical good, crazy music good. All the solos are ripping. I don't think Angus has ever played a solo that hasn't touch someone in some kind of way. So
and we're talking like such a huge period of time these guys have been around. The lineup's changed so much throughout their career. You know, Power Up came out, I think it was November. Again, lineup very different to the album that we're talking about today. But, you know, it seems like a really good time to go back to the very beginning with High Voltage. What kind of an impact? It sounds like, you know, we're getting an idea of the impact AC/DC's had for you. Once you'd listened to High Voltage, Highway to Hell, you know, have you kind of gone beyond those? You know, are AC/DC like a big influence on you as a musician?
Yeah, AC/DC, like I say, I mean, I want to say my first love for music was Guns N' Roses. But shortly after that, I would have to say that AC/DC came along, and I haven't stopped listening to them. They're definitely one of my biggest influences. I mean, I'm not going to lie. They have a tons of great music. But after Back in Black, I really didn't listen to any of the other albums. I listened to, you know, For Those About to Rock, that's a good song, but I've never really just got on there and just listened to the album. But albums like High Voltage, Dirty Deeds, Let There Be Rock, Highway to Hell, those are my top four albums, because I feel like that's when they were kind of really taking over the world. And that's when really people was like, holy crap, who's this band that, you know, are putting out all these great songs? And it's got a lot to do, you know, with stage presence as well, because, you know, I grew up with my dad telling me about when he saw AC/DC, how Angus never stops. The band will take a break and he'll do his solo, but he never stops moving. That also has been another influence on me, because I try to do the same thing. You know, when we're playing a show, I try to entertain the people as much as possible. I try to keep moving, like you know, I heard my dad say a long while ago. That's another reason that AC/DC has always caught my ear, you know. But yeah, they always put on a great show, and not only did they put on a great show, but they played awesome music as well.
And I think, you know, the album we're talking about, you know, this was the first, as you'd said, the first international release for AC/DC. It's a compilation of two albums that they released in Australia a couple of years before in 1975. So there's High Voltage and TNT, and they've essentially picked the best tracks from both of those and come up with what we know as High Voltage. And once we go track by track, obviously we'll talk a bit more about which of those albums that each track comes from. Have you heard particularly the Australian version of High Voltage? Because not many of those tracks made it onto this album. Have you heard that, or for you, does the AC/DC story start here?
I honestly think that it just starts here, man. I don't think that I have heard it, but I definitely need to check that out if I haven't heard it.
And I think it's, you know, they were never released internationally, but you could, I'm sure, like in the days of YouTube and technology, I'm sure it'd be really easy to at least hear some of the songs. And there are a couple that make it onto this album. So let's go back to the early 70s. So AC/DC were formed in November 1973, spearheaded, of course, by Angus and Malcolm Young. We've talked a bit about Angus already. You know, they were very much the heart and soul of AC/DC for decades. Malcolm sadly passed away a few years ago. But for so many, it is, you know, obviously we talk about Bon, we talk about Brian Johnson, all these people. For so many, it was Angus and Malcolm. They were AC/DC, that heart and soul, like I said. What is it about the partnership of the two of them? Because I think, you know, there is something missing when you don't have one of them. What is it about that partnership of these two that was so special?
I definitely believe that, man, because that's probably the reason that I really can't. I don't know. I feel like Bon and Malcolm and Angus in general was AC/DC. So I think that's why I can't make myself get past certain albums. I don't know. It's like that brotherly thing, man. Like Pantera had Dimebag and Vinny, and you know, Van Halen had Eddie and Alex. And I feel like it's that kind of bond, you know. They grew up together. They've been playing for years. They're so tight. And also, you know, the show that Angus puts on, I feel like that's why he's the main star of the show. Because, I mean, I've got a poster I'm sitting here looking at in my room right now. And, you know, it has a picture of the whole band in the back, but Angus is on the rest of the poster. Like, he's the main idea of the poster. Yeah, that's my opinion. I feel like they grew up together, and I feel like they got really tight, which, I'm not going to lie, even though I'm a lead guitar player, Malcolm Young is probably the greatest rhythm guitar player of all time in classic rock. But, you know, our guitar player, Logan, he reminds me a lot of Malcolm, because he kills me on rhythm. Like, I can't play rhythm like Logan can at all. But, yeah, that's just my opinion. I feel like that brotherly chemistry of the band is what really took them so far and made them who they were in AC/DC.
And it's interesting because I know, obviously, you know, AC/DC, they're the quintessential Australian band, aren't they? What is funny is that the guys we're talking about, Malcolm, Angus, Bon, are actually all Scottish. They all were kind of born in Scotland and moved over when they were kids to Australia. It's interesting. I've got a quote here from Angus in an interview in 2008. And he says, "Everyone knows we started in Australia. AC/DC was formed there. It probably wouldn't have come out of any other country. Because of the music at that time, it was the right climate, the right time, the right people. Australia's got that kind of rawness about it, that kind of rough edge about it. And if anything, we've always had that rough edge." Do you think there's a point to that? Because, like, you know, I don't think there really are many, if any, bands who sound like AC/DC. Do you think, obviously, the environment they grew up in, kind of growing up in Australia, do you think that plays a huge part in the sound that we get on High Voltage?
I do. I feel very strongly about that. I feel like what Bon was singing about, I feel like he really lived it and he really did it. Like when he says, "If you're looking for trouble, I'm the man, you know, to see," or whatever. I feel like he, you know, if you came upon him, you know, you better watch out, because I feel like he, you know, he's got that hard edge and he's mean, you know. And I really truly believe that. I think, you know, that's one of the most powerful lyrics. You know, he wasn't afraid of anything. He's walking through this world with, you know, his chest pumped up, and I don't think he lied about that. So, yes, I do agree with that. I do, very, very much so. And, you know, you're telling me things that I didn't even know about the band. I wonder if that explains why they had bagpipes in It's a Long Way to the Top, If You Want to Rock and Roll, because isn't bagpipes like a Scottish thing?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, when we get there, I'll tell you a bit of a story about those bagpipes. There is quite an interesting story attached to that, so quite a funny one. So yeah, but that is, it's the Scottish connection why the bagpipes are in that song, definitely.
Okay, cool.
We've talked about him quite a lot already, but the other major piece of this puzzle, so we've talked about the Young Brothers, it is Bon Scott. You know, he replaced the original lead singer, Dave Evans. The band were looking for a more kind of hard blues rock sound. Bon was actually a friend of Angus and Malcolm's brother, George, who also produced High Voltage. And he didn't actually become lead singer straight away. I'd seen a video online, and it was an interview with Bon, and he was saying that he was actually the chauffeur for the band. And he used to drive the band from kind of gigs to the hotel and back again, saw they were looking for a singer. He's like, "I can sing," had an audition, and he got the job. So obviously, we've talked a lot about how you feel about Bon in the band and in his kind of role in AC/DC. If the Young Brothers, if they are the heart and soul like we're talking about, you know, what's Bon? Kind of what does he bring that perhaps has been missing for you, certainly, since that final album with him?
Yeah, I feel like without Bon, man, they weren't even AC/DC, man. even though the Young Brothers were definitely a huge role of the band, I still feel like without Bon, it would not give me that same feeling that it does give me, because I feel like he really brought some, how do I put this? His lyrics really made the feel of the band, because they were playing the music, you know, perfectly for it to be classic, freaking just in your face, loud Marshall amp and SG guitar, you know. And then he just brought the lyrics and that voice, that tone of voice, you know, how he has that raspy, scratchy voice. He brought that, and that kind of like made the glue for the band. That's the way I feel.
And as we'd said earlier, you know, High Voltage, it's made up of tracks from both of these, like the original High Voltage and TNT that were released in Australia in 1975. So High Voltage, as in Australian High Voltage, just to make sure we kind of get them kind of defined. That was released in the February of 1975, and Louder Sound said of it, with glam rock in the ascendancy at the time, it's quite clear that High Voltage draws its inspiration from an earlier era. The songs have elemental melodies, and the boys' way with the backing chorus suggests that the glam craze had some effect on the young AC/DC, but also present as a strong hint of the blues-based hard rock combined with the chugging early rock and roll style, something that would swiftly develop into AC/DC's trademark sound. I guess my question, so if I'd said to you know, so two of the later tracks on our version of High Voltage, so She's Got Balls and Little Lover, they're the two tracks off this album that are off the original High Voltage. Would that surprise you? Do you think they stand out compared to the rest of the album in any way?
A Little Lover, I do, because as I got older, that song, I don't know, it caught my ear, man, and I really never expected to enjoy that song. I really didn't. And I mean, to this day, I have to say, She's Got Balls is probably my least favorite song on the album. But Little Lover is one of my top songs for this album. And I was wondering, I kind of felt a different vibe from the song than the rest of them. But that's cool that you tell me that now, because that makes sense, man. That's really cool.
They wasted little time getting back into the studio. So obviously High Voltage, the original, did pretty well in Australia, got themselves in to record the follow-up TNT, which was released in the November. So we're talking like less than a year between the release of these two albums. Built on momentum, and it sounds like it was a much more the sound that we've come to expect. So all the other tracks that we're going to talk about today originally came from TNT. Louder Sound said of this one, where High Voltage sounded like a band taking their first, albeit still electrifying, steps into the world of rock and roll. TNT not only sent out a strong signal that he was a band to stay for the long haul, but it also gave every indication that he was a group who just might have what it takes to go all the way to the top. The start of the now well-recognized, relentless AC/DC boogie machine, which is a really, like, I love the way they put that, because there's something about the sound. And again, I think it is very much down to Angus and Malcolm, this kind of almost, they call it like an AC/DC boogie machine. Do you know what they mean by that? It's just that, I don't know, there's some like intangible thing about AC/DC that the moment you put a song on, my 3-year-old knows when I put an AC/DC song on. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, man, I was just thinking before I got in this interview, I wanted to say that, but you beat me to the punch. It's like, yeah, it's so distinct, man. If you hear the first chord of an AC/DC song, somebody in the room is going to know it's AC/DC, or everybody in the room is going to know it is. And that's cool that you say that about TNT, because I feel like they followed that same blueprint, that same pattern, you know, throughout their musical career with that TNT. I mean, that song, I've heard it so many times, I don't want to hear it again, but I feel like that's the same style that they have followed on through all their albums, is just those blues chords, you know, rock and roll rhythms and nasty leads that are just in your face. And yeah, that's awesome, man, because I feel the same way, man. I feel like everybody knows AC/DC whenever they hear the first note of a song, and if they don't, they'll know it by the chorus anyways.
So like I said, these two albums, you know, they assured that AC/DC were a pretty big deal in Australia, but obviously they wanted to extend that reach. You know, they wanted to become, you know, the massive band that they are. And so they flew over to the UK to build their reputation on the live circuit. They were signed by Atlantic Records, and they were kind of lumped in. So this was 1976. So over here in the UK, that's when the punk scene was really starting to come through. I think it was 77 when it really hit, but you know, obviously a lot of these punk bands were just sort of coming through. So AC/DC often got lumped in with the punk movement at that point. And their manager, Michael Browning, said in his memoir, Dog Eat Dog, that it wasn't possible to even have a conversation with AC/DC about punk without them getting totally pissed off. So they obviously didn't like that label. I don't necessarily agree with that label, but do you think there is anything about the AC/DC sound that we could call punk? Or do you think that's just a lazy comparison because the shows were quite wild?
I definitely think that's a lazy comparison. I believe what you just said about them getting pissed whenever they asked them about punk music, or however you said it. I kind of believe that just by hearing them and the way I feel when I listen to AC/DC. Yeah, I don't hear any punk in the music at all of AC/DC.
No way. And I think that's it. I think for me, they're almost the complete antithesis of that. But I'm wondering if just because they came up at that time, music journalists thought it was easy to throw them into that. But yeah, I think it's just a bit of a, like we said, maybe not the best of comparisons.
Right.
So I know, obviously, Atlantic and the band, they made the decision to take the tracks, as we've said, from the two albums, put them together, and release this album that we're going to go track by track very shortly to go into. Today, obviously, you know, we're talking about it as a classic album. This is a podcast about classic albums, AC/DC, one of the biggest bands in rock history. When it first came out, Rolling Stone infamously, like, slated the album, hated it. And I've got part of the review here. It says, those concerned with the future of hard rock may take solace in knowing that the release of the first US album by these Australian gross-out champions, the genre has hit an all-time low. Lead singer Bon Scott spits out his vocals with a truly annoying aggression, which I suppose is the only way to do it, when all you seem to care about is being a star so that you can get laid every night. Stupidity bothers me. Calculated stupidity offends me. And I think it's crazy. I mean, Rolling Stone have bashed some of the great bands over the years, to be perfectly honest, but how crazy that there was some parts of kind of the, obviously, the music press and stuff that completely dismissed this album and the band in the beginning.
Yes, I believe that entirely. It's funny that, you know, someone could say that, but, you know, you're always going to have people that hate on your music. You're never going to have 100% fans. And I'm sure they knew that, but the fact that by the time, you know, the band still tours or whatever, but by the time the original members were either dead or, you know, didn't play with the band at the time, they were still, like, number one on the charts of Rolling Stones and on the front of all these magazines. So they kind of slapped Rolling Stone in the face, I guess, by showing them that they were going to be one of the biggest bands in the entire world.
And it's, if you think, I mean, even, you know, Queen always got a hard rap, Kiss always got a bad rap. So it's always interesting to see, I think Rush as well. So it's interesting to see, like, obviously, when these bands do achieve the success they deserve, that how quickly people can turn sometimes and think, all right, actually, no, we do like these guys now.
Yeah, that is crazy, man, because, you know, there's a lot of bands that I've grown up and I didn't think that I liked them. But then, you know, my opinion changed for the band as I got older. And, you know, I just don't put it out there, you know, that I hate this band or whatever. But, you know, Rolling Stones, they've been a huge corporation and magazine and everything for years. So they have the right to, I guess, say what they want to say about music as the years have passed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's nice that they sometimes revisit it and kind of change their perspective on stuff as well. I mean, time's been much kinder to High Voltage. We wouldn't be talking about it today, I think, if that review had stuck and people felt that way about it. And it is regarded as a hugely important album for both AC/DC and kind of classic rock, hard rock in general. Happy Media called High Voltage a synthesis of rock and roll blues that would sway Australian music forever. So we're about to go track by track, but why do you think, before we get into the songs individually, why do you think these songs we're talking about, like It's a Long Way to the Top, like Livewire, like TNT, why do you think these songs have kind of resonated so long for what's nearly 50 years at this point?
Well, the reason that I think they say it's a long way to the top, if you want to rock and roll, now that you just told me that about Rolling Stones magazine, I can see them writing about lyrics like this. But I can also see it because I'm in the struggle for exactly what they were doing. You know, they came out, and you know, you just got to grind whenever you're first starting out and see how it goes. And you know, AC/DC never had to try and tour through a pandemic. But I know exactly what they mean whenever they say it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll, because it's 100% true.
And it's funny because we're going to go track by track now. We're going to talk about that song to get started. And I guess that was my first question. You know, as someone who's kind of in a band yourself, you know, up and coming, is it a song that resonates really strongly, I guess, particularly in the middle of a pandemic, like you say, when, you know, when touring is less of an option and we have to be a little more kind of creative with stuff, you know, does this become an anthem for kind of all the up and coming bands like yourself? You know, is it this really relatable song that talks about, you know, these kind of the hard work that it takes to become a rock star?
Yes, it absolutely does, you know, because people don't realize, you know, being in a rock band is not easy peasy. A lot of people think, you know, oh, you're in a touring rock band, you're making a tons of money, and all you're doing is playing guitar. No, that's not true. I've played in dive bars since I was 15 years old. I've made $100 a night, and I've made $50 a night. You know, I've looked up to people that I've now known and met and could call them right now. But it's all a grind, you know. It's not something that just comes to you. It's not like getting a piece of cake from, you know, the food line or the grocery store or something. It's just like every other business that someone starts up. You got to start somewhere. And unless you got somebody giving you money to do things, I mean, it's rough, you know. Thank God we have our parents because, you know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be where we are now. Yeah, man, I definitely, we're living that right now. And I feel like for a band like us that just signed a record deal during a pandemic, I feel like we're kind of getting it harder, but we're not somebody that's going to gripe and complain and cry about that. You know, it's just life. It's something that happens, you know. I definitely see where AC/DC was coming from, but we don't plan on stopping anytime soon, whether there's a pandemic or not. So we're coming for everyone.
I mean, it's one of the most iconic songs in their career. I mean, in a career filled with iconic songs, it's definitely one of them. It actually opened TNT as well as kind of the international version of High Voltage. As an album opener, you know, what makes it such a strong opener? Why is it the right choice to open an album? Because obviously they've made that decision to use it twice.
Yeah, I feel like whoever at the time decided to put that song as the first song on the album, whether it was their manager, producer, the band themselves, I feel like they really chose a great choice to put on there, because I feel like that song is one of those songs that everybody knows. If you're an AC/DC fan and you don't know that song, you're not an AC/DC fan. But yeah, I mean, if you come out with that song, you know, people hear that and they're like, these guys are grinding right now. They're doing it, you know, and they, you know, they're writing about the real things in life and not some phony stuff like some bands have done in the past. And so, yeah, I feel like that was the perfect song to put at the top of the album.
And we've already talked a bit about one of the things that makes it so unique, which is the use of its bagpipes. And there's this almost kind of like, sort of like dual calling between Angus on guitar and the bagpipes. And obviously, as we'd said, a lot of that's because of the huge Scottish presence in the band. George Young, who was producing the album, he'd spent nearly $500 Australian on a set of bagpipes after Bon told him that he played in a pipe band when he was younger. So he's obviously thought, great, Bon can play bagpipes on this.
Yeah.
Turns out that Bon was actually just the drummer. So he actually kind of had to teach himself to play the bagpipes, which, you know, he played like woodwind instruments, like recorders and stuff before. So what you are hearing is Bon. They did make it work. But I just love the fact that he's like, oh yeah, I can do that. And he'd never done it before.
That's crazy, dude. I like hearing all this information because that's hilarious. You know, there's a lot of people out there that'll talk their way into something that don't know how to get themselves out of it. But the fact that he did it and he actually, you know, accomplished it, that just shows that he was so eager to get to where he was before he died, you know?
And we all know that feeling, don't we, where you're like, oh yeah, I can do that. And then you're thinking, actually, I don't know about this. But again, like you say, the fact that not only that happened, but that he did it. And again, he ended up kind of doing this live as well. It wasn't played live a huge amount of times, but on most of the occasions that it was, that Bon would play that section on the bagpipes as well. I can't think, other than Korn, I can't think of any other kind of major band who've ever used bagpipes and put them front and center like that.
I can't either, man. That's why that's also what stuck out to me is when I heard the bagpipes. I didn't know what they were, you know, when I first heard that song. I heard that song back when I was, you know, probably 10 or 12 years ago. I didn't know what they were, but I knew that they sounded cool and it was unique for them to be in a rock and roll song. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that I've heard or seen anyone playing bagpipes in a rock song since.
And obviously, I was talking about how they tried to replicate this live. Again, their manager, Michael Brown, and talked a bit about this in his book, Dog Eat Dog, saying that it caused a lot of problems for Bon. He said, "I think they probably put more pressure on them than anything I can think of. They never worked. It's a hard instrument to time to guitars because you're pumping them and they kind of kick in when the bag's full. Very difficult to time to guitars." I've actually heard a story, again, I think I'd read they maybe only did this 20, 30 times live. And I know that Bon had left the bagpipes by the side of the stage one gig. The fans had absolutely just completely destroyed them, and he was over the moon. He was overjoyed because it meant he didn't have to play them again. So just, you know, again, creating all these problems for himself. But I guess, you know, again, a phenomenal part of this song, and unmistakable that it's of the song you're listening to whenever you hear it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
For me, as I'd said, that if there's so many songs in terms of Bon's career within AC/DC that we could pick as kind of the key one. I think so. I would possibly lean to this one because I know that, you know, I've seen AC/DC with Brian a couple of times, and some of the songs we're going to talk about today, he does sing. Long Way to the Top, If You Want to Rock and Roll, is not one of them. Brian, out of respect, has never sang that song with AC/DC. Why do you think that is? Do you think that this is perhaps Bond's definitive moment, or do you think there's other songs maybe later in the album or on other albums which is more that's Bond's moment, that's his kind of quintessential time?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I really could. Also, you know, AC/DC was already established whenever Brian came to play, you know, so I feel like maybe he doesn't sing that song because he didn't go through the grit and the battle to the top with AC/DC. So I feel like that, yes, I feel like that could be a possibility.
So Brian, he's probably the only rock star who's not tackled the song at some point. So I was listening to a version, Lemmy from Motorhead's covered it, John Farnham has covered it, perhaps most famously Jack Black for the movie School of Rock. I think it's at the very end he sings it. You know, why do you think this one is covered so much? Do you think it is about the lyrics are so relatable? You know, fair enough that Lemmy, for example, might not have done that journey with AC/DC, but Lemmy will have worked his way up with Hawkwind and Motorhead just like everybody else.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's a trademark for rock and roll music. I feel like, yes, that's why it's covered so much is because when people hear that song, especially if you're a musician, they really feel the lyrics and they understand it is a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. There's bands that's been out for 40 years and, you know, still haven't made it. And, you know, my band and I, we are blessed to have found someone like Richard Young from the Headhunters to, you know, help us get signed and know people. Because if not, we would still be grinding right now, you know, trying to find somebody to take us under their wing like he has. It's still a long way to the top because, you know, we just got hit with a pandemic in the middle of trying to play under a major record label.
So let's move on to Rock and Roll Singer. So interestingly, Subjective Sound says of this one, "Rock and Roll Singer isn't a bad song, but arguably isn't anything to write home about." And I remembered it stuck out to me when you were saying when you listened to the album for the first time that, again, this one didn't catch your attention straight away. So would you agree with what they're saying? You know, do you feel it is a bit of a come down after a track like It's a Long Way to the Top?
I do. I feel like it is, you know, especially when I was younger, I did. I feel like it, you know, that first song was just to catch the audience. And after that, you know, they knew that that was going to be a big hit. So that's why they put it first on the album. But this song, man, this song, I really like the song now, you know, that I've gotten older. But I like the drive that he had by saying he, you know, he was going to be a rock and roll singer and he was going to be a rock and roll star, regardless of his parents wanting him to be a doctor or a lawyer man. But, you know, that's how a lot of these bands grew up. Their parents did not want them to be a rock and roll singer, a rock and roll star. They didn't think that that was the formal thing to do, you know, back in the day. So, you know, I'm blessed to have, you know, my dad and all of our parents in this band that actually, you know, want us to be a rock and roll singer and a rock and roll star because that's what they know that we want to do, and they're 100% behind it. They're all music lovers, and they all see talent in us. So, you know, it's crazy to see how things have changed throughout the world over the past, you know, 50, 40 or 50 years.
Again, it's similarly themed to the song we just talked about. It is about that struggle, you know, he's saying I'm gonna be a rock and roll star. And of course he was. We all know he was. The song maybe didn't kind of take off in the way that some of these bigger songs that we're talking about did. but it paints this picture of his aspirations to be kind of this star. You know, and I've got a quote here from NME who say, you know, Scott, of course, nails it with the chorus, but it's also the little details that make the song. Like when he quips, "I had other plans and I'm all ears," before belting out his destiny of becoming a rock star. And I guess I wonder, you know, perhaps, like I say, when we've just had this really heavy hitter of a song, sometimes it maybe gets a little passed over. I think you've said as you've got older, you've appreciated it a bit more. Do you think maybe it is a little underrated? Do you think that perhaps it is? Because there's a couple of tracks on the album that maybe get hidden amongst some of the bigger songs on the album.
I feel like it's definitely underrated, especially, you know, the older I get and the more mature my brain is for music. I feel like it's very underrated because he did what he said he was going to do. This is the first album. I mean, I don't know. You probably know, but I don't think that they were really that huge of a band after this first album was released. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he made a statement in that song, and I feel like it's looked over, and it shouldn't be, because the statement he made, he did it. I'm not going to say himself. It takes a band, you know, to make it to the top. But he did what he said he was going to do, and he was a rock and roll singer, and he was a rock and roll star. And a lot of people can't just write about that and actually do it, you know. So I think that is one of the most underrated songs of AC/DC's, because they did it, you know. That should be one of the songs that people listen to and they're like, man, this dude, he really did what he said he was going to do in these lyrics.
It's like self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? And I think you hear this all the time, you know, the big iconic frontmen, the big iconic rock stars, you know, Bon Scott, Freddie Mercury, they knew they were going to be a success. It wasn't a matter of if, it was when.
Exactly. Absolutely, man. We've had the same mindset. I'm not going to say that we put it the way that, you know, Bon did, because he basically just said, look, I'm going to be a rock and roll singer. But we wouldn't put it that way, but I think that we are. We just got to make it through these hard times, because that's what we all want to do. And if you want to do something, you put your mind to it and you do it. And I'm sure that's the way that he felt as well. And look what happened to him. So that's the way that, you know, I interpret that song there.
Our track-by-track look at AC/DC's High Voltage will be continuing with my guest Riley Cousart of the Georgia Thunderbolts very shortly indeed. You know, it's been really exciting to get Riley on. I've been kind of admiring the Georgia Thunderbolts from afar for a little bit now, touring with the likes of Blackstone Cherry and the Kentucky Headhunters. Again, anyone who knows me knows that I love that kind of southern rock, and I think that Georgia Thunderbolts are absolutely going to be a band to watch over the next few years. So, absolute thrill to get Riley on the show. And like you're saying, he's, you know, he's 22, you know, plenty of time for this band to break through, become absolutely huge with any luck. Mascot Records last year released a self-titled EP for the band, and Mascot have kindly let us play a track from that today. This is the Georgia Thunderbolts with Looking for an Old Friend.
the track,
on to the Jack. So another classic that's still performed by AC/DC to this day. I think a lot of people who maybe don't listen to the lyrics particularly deeply, they'll not know that this song's actually about gonorrhea, and it was originally titled The Clap. Obviously I don't know if that's something that you knew. How can Bond take a subject, because again you've talked about his lyrics, you know, how do you think it is that he can take a subject such as gonorrhea, you know, like sexually transmitted diseases, and then make this song that's just so utterly beloved by everybody?
By the way, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I did not know that song was about that, but that's because he was a rock star, and he was smart lyrically. And, you know, you don't find people like that anymore, man. Like, the way that he turned the song into something that everyone loves when it was about something, you know, so despairing, I think is freaking amazing, dude.
And I mean, Bond talked about the song to Sounds Magazine in 1976. He said, "We were living with this house full of ladies who were all very friendly, and everyone in the band had got the Jack," which is obviously Australian slang for the clap. "We wrote this song, and the first time we did it on stage, they were all in the front row with no idea what was going to happen. When it came to repeating 'She's got the Jack,' I pointed at them one after another." The more I hear about these shows, like you hear about like Angus Moonen and all of this stuff, you know, these shows were really, really raucous. I think to have been at an AC/DC show kind of in those early days in the mid-70s must have just been a hell of an experience.
Yes, man, absolutely. I did not know any of this. That's awesome. You know, it's gonna give me a different meaning to the song, you know, when I listen to it now, and I can actually use my imagination and close my eyes and see Bond pointing at some girls on the front row, you know. So that's cool, man. I appreciate you sharing that information with me.
Yeah. I mean, some facts, they use the Jack as evidence that AC/DC possibly took the music more seriously than the lyrics. So, you know, we've always said how tight, how just perfect the music is in this stuff, and that they would often just write things that would amuse them. And I can certainly kind of think of that with Bond. Do you think that is part of their charm, that, you know, the lyrics, you know, they can be a little bit of a sly wink to something else, they can be amusing, they can be funny, but the music really backs it up as well and really makes it strong?
Yeah, I mean, now that I look at it this way, I absolutely do, man, because, you know, a lot of people are listening to it and they're getting a different meaning from it, but he may have been trying to be sly. And nobody really realizes that because the music is so great and his voice just fits the music so much. And they're interpreting the song in a different way. But the more you dig into stuff, no matter what it is, and learn, you know, the actual meaning of things, that's when you actually start to realize, you know, you start to see the real them, whoever wrote the song, you know, that you see that he was kind of a little jokester, also a rock and roll star.
And it's interesting because, again, you know, obviously the lyrics, they can also, when you kind of read them, they can also like allude to poker. But if you listen to kind of a live performance of this song, so there's definitely one on If You Want Blood, You've Got It. There were some lyrics that Bond had originally written. I think even the band had been like, right, come on, this is a bit too much. The original lyrics, you can hear on If You Want Blood, You've Got It, which is obviously probably like a more R-rated version of the song in all of its glory. I don't suppose, have you heard that version of the Jack live on If You Want Blood, You've Got It? Or is that something you're going to want to check out?
I'm definitely going to check it out. And I probably have watched it before, but I don't think I have. I'm not sure.
I mean, Angus said, you know, about Bond's songwriting, because I think that's the key to all of this. You know, Bond was an extremely gifted lyricist. Did he often fine-tune and rework lyrics? It's difficult to be simultaneously clever and smutty, which was his trademark. And I think that's the point we're saying, anyway. It's this real talent for walking the line between, you know, the really well-crafted, well-written lyrics, but again, maybe a bit of a cheeky side, maybe a bit of a smutty side. And I think that's kind of the trademark of Bon Scott, compared to maybe kind of the later AC/DC stuff with Brian, which is maybe a little more kind of, maybe moves away from that a little bit sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely agree.
So let's move on to Livewire. So this is one you singled out pretty much near the beginning here. So it was a huge live favourite in the early days of the band. Mark Evans, who plays bass on High Voltage, said it was loud, clean, deep, menacing, and full of rhythm. And I think a lot of that menace that he's talking about actually comes from the bass in this song. I think it's got such a cool opening. And we talk all the time about Bon and the Youngs, and obviously, you know, the bass players like Cliff, who played with AC/DC later. But, you know, Mark, he was only in the band for a short space of time. What do you think, particularly on Livewire, what do you think of the bass in the song? What do you think of the bass on this album?
I love the bass, particularly on this song, because it starts with bass, you know, and the bass carries the song throughout the entirety of it. The bass is just sitting there driving, man, which, you know, the whole rhythm is driving on this song, but the bass kind of corresponds with the lyrics that he's writing. I feel like they're mean and they're just driving. And the way I look at it and the way I've always looked at it is I could just see, you know, Bond walking down the road, you know, in his cut off denim shirt, you know, with no undershirt and jeans. And that bass is just like his footsteps. I feel like that's the way that I've looked at it, you know, because the way he talks, you know, he's a mean, you know, mean man, a, you know, sly, cool dude, you know. The footsteps that he's taking down the street is that bass, and they're driving him going down the street.
And, you know, Rolling Stone, we talked about them quite a lot, but we went track by track. They've obviously warmed to AC/DC, as we've said, over the years. They did an article last year, AC/DC's 25 Essential Songs, and they put Livewire in there, saying it was never a single, it had such a killer groove and a strong dose of Bon Scott's madcap personality that it became the band's standard opener until the singer's death in 1980. And I know you'd said, again, you were going through the album, Livewire was the one that really kind of just kind of opened all of this up for you. What is it about Livewire? So again, when you heard it for the first time, when you listen to it now, what is it about it that just makes it such a highlight for you?
I really like the, my favorite part is the lyrics, because he's talking about how he's such a badass, I guess. I don't know, it's like one of them things that you just listen to it and you're like, man, that guy was cool, you know, especially when you're a kid. And I just heard the lyrics and I was like, man, this guy, you know, I wonder if he was really like this, you know. I wonder if he was really this freaking cool. Also, the guitar work on the solo, this song has always been one of my favorite guitar solos, you know, one of those that I can just sing whenever. Or hum whenever I hear it come on. I know it note by note.
And as I mentioned in that Rolling Stone quote there, this was actually the opener for AC/DC gigs throughout the Bon Scott era. You know, neither of us were there, unfortunately, but do you think it would make a great opener for a live show? I mean, obviously, you'll know yourself a lot more than I would. There must be a lot of consideration and a lot of kind of thought that goes into what's going to open your show and kind of suck an audience in.
It does, man, for sure, because you want something that really, like, smacks the fans in the face, you know, and says, hey, you're in for a treat because this is going to be a show. And I feel like, yes, that song could be that because it's so mean and it just comes out, you know, comes out driving with that bass. And then, you know, I can see Bond walking on stage and doing his thing because he was quite the showman. I mean, you know, he was crazy, you could tell just by the look in his eye. And I bet when they came out with that song, everybody was hooked for the rest of the show. They were like, this is going to be a freaking rock and roll show here, man.
And I think what's really interesting is, you know, Livewire was one of the songs, as we'd said, it was played loads of the Bon Scott era, rarely played with Brian Johnson. During the Rock or Bust tour, obviously, when Brian was temporarily, was he kicked out? Did he leave? Obviously, there's all sorts of conjecture about that. But during the Rock or Bust tour, when he wasn't a part of the show, and Axl Rose stepped in, he brought Livewire back into the set list. Now, obviously, I know you'd said Guns N' Roses were your first love. Did you hear Axl's take on Livewire or any of the stuff that Axl was doing with AC/DC at the time?
Yeah, I heard. Actually, our drummer, he went and saw AC/DC with the Guns N' Roses. And in my opinion, man, he didn't fill Bon Scott's shoes, but he did step up to the plate, and he did. He sounded all right with the band. And the fact that he did do Livewire kind of makes me think that that might have been one of his favorite AC/DC songs, and he requested that they play that while he was the singer. And I think that that's also, you know, cool that they started doing that song with Axl in the band.
And you know what it is? He got so much crap for doing that. But at the end of the day, I think people were just expecting that to be this huge, colossal failure. I think people love Brian Johnson. They were really sad with how it went down. I mean, he's back with the band now. But, you know, and I think a lot of people were thinking, yeah, this isn't going to be great. And any clips that I've seen, I haven't seen them live with Axl, but any clips that I saw from that tour, I think he didn't fill Bon's shoes, but he did a hell of a job. I think anyone who kind of walked away from that feeling kind of ripped off, I would disagree with that. I think he did a good job.
I would too, man. I mean, not only do you get to see another star with a different band, but he actually kind of had that edge that AC/DC's always had when he sings, which you can hear that in Guns N' Roses songs too. It sounds like it's kind of cut out for maybe AC/DC or something, but yeah, I definitely would not be disappointed if I would have went to one of the shows.
So let's move on to TNT now. So this is the start of side two if we're talking vinyl. The song really needs little introduction. I know you joked earlier on that you've heard it so much, you know, you almost wouldn't be bothered if you didn't hear it again. It is a real hard rock staple to this day. Why do you think that is? What is it about TNT that makes it such a classic?
I don't know, man. It's just, it's another one of those songs that the guitar, that really caught my ear when I first started listening to this album as well, because just the simplest riff, that bam, 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 is like an AC/DC trademark. That really caught a bunch of people's ear, and the lyrics, everybody's just like, holy cow, this is true rock and roll, true grit right here.
And, you know, Ultimate Classic Rock talk about the origins of a key part of the song. So the Oi chant that obviously comes in at the beginning and towards the end. So obviously that's a really popular part of it. Again, if you see them live and they do that bit, you can't help but kind of get into that. That was after George had told Angus, he'd heard Angus doing it as a joke. I think he was doing it to sort of kind of let Malcolm know about kind of the time that they wanted the riff to go, something like that. George heard Angus doing that, insisted on adding it to the mix. But you know, those elements, they're just the icing on the cake. It's the quality of the songs that stand out. And I guess that's what we forget, you know, that these guys, they were a very new band at this point, you know, and the songs we're talking about, you know, AC/DC only a couple of years old when they're recording these songs. 50 years on, nearly, from when they formed and wrote these songs, we're still talking about them. We're getting to the point where we're like, do we even want to listen to this anymore because it's played so much?
Right. Dude, that's so cool that what you just said about Angus, you know, counting the beat of the song, that's awesome. I didn't know that. You go to any bowling alley or any bar or any music venue, and you're going to hear TNT. Like, it's just a given, and you're just like, oh, my God. It's like listening to Welcome to the Jungle. It's like, would y'all please just play something different off the album.
Do you think it's a good point though, because we're not disputing that the song's not a great song, of course it is, but do you think that there may be possibly like Livewire or other songs that maybe should get a bit more love, and do you think that maybe TNT is maybe a little bit overplayed compared to some of the other tracks?
I definitely think it is, man, because the way that people look at music these days, they think, okay, if we found a hit song, let's just play it. Let's just keep playing it until the end of time. And I don't think it should be that way. Once you've had the song playing so long on radio airplay, I feel like it's time to change it up and pick a different song off the album and give somebody a different taste of something that they might not have. There's people out here that might know TNT, but they've never heard another AC/DC song in their life. And I feel like that's wrong, man, because I feel like they need to quit driving these mainstream songs into people's heads and let them get a taste of the real AC/DC and actually venture off into different songs on the album.
So Drew Millard over at passionvice.com, he has a lot of love for TNT. and he's clearly had some thoughts about the lyrics, and again, talking about Bond's songwriting. He says, "I'm beginning to think that the power load that Mr. Scott is referring to is located in his sexual nether regions and not at the base of a building slated for demolition. Instead, he's referring to a load of cum." So, you know, we've already had a song on the album about gonorrhea. I guess it's not a major stretch to think that this song's about sex.
It's definitely not a major stretch, man. I mean, you know, it's crazy that, you know, that's somebody has thought that, but also from, yeah, like you say, the other song about gonorrhea, I could definitely see it.
I mean, obviously he praises the song, but he notes it's a spectacular song that lives up to the album just as it was starting to lose its way a little. Do you see where he's coming from there? I mean, I'm guessing you wouldn't agree, because just before this was Livewire, I don't get a sense the album is losing its way particularly, but at least that's kind of what he's thinking.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think they had the album in a great order, because that song is like halfway through the album there. You go four songs and you've got TNT, which, as long as you got two hits on the album, people's definitely going to listen to the album for sure. But I don't think it was a far stretch from Livewire to go to TNT.
I mean, it's been covered, similar to Long Way to the Top, it's been covered so much over the years. You know, Anthrax covered it. I saw Puddle of Mud cover it. You know, it shows the reach and the influence of AC/DC, that bands from all sorts of different genres and subgenres are covering this song. Sputnik Music goes far to say that TNT is the song that best sums up AC/DC. Would you agree with that? Do you think TNT is the best example of what the band's about? Do you think that's why it's played so much?
I do. I actually do feel like that. And, you know, songs like Highway to Hell. Highway to Hell was basically just another blueprint of TNT. And it was one of their hugest songs. And so, yes, I do believe that, because TNT is that driving, mean, sly, dirty rock and roll that AC/DC brought to the table whenever they came out with the song TNT.
So let's move on to Can I Sit Next to You, Girl? So, in Another Time, this was actually the first ever AC/DC single with another singer. So while this version was on High Voltage and TNT previously, with Bon on vocals, the original version was released in 1974 with original vocalist Dave Evans on vocals. It was never released outside of Australia. I don't think it's even in print anymore, but you can find it on YouTube. It is out there. I was having a bit of a watch of it this morning. Have you heard this original, kind of the Dave Evans version of Can I Sit Next to You, Girl? And if you have, how does it compare to what we're hearing on High Voltage?
I actually have not heard the other version, so I couldn't answer that question.
No, fair enough. I mean, like I said, I had a bit more of a listen to it at that time, you know, and you can see from what they're wearing, you can see from kind of the sound of it, they're definitely taking a lot of inspiration from the glam scene. So if you think 74, you know, glam was massive at the time, you know, like T-Rex and Bowie and all of that stuff. And you can tell it's not like overtly glam, but there's definitely a glam influence there. And again, particularly, I think obviously other than Angus wearing the schoolboy outfit, they're all kind of dressed in that kind of style. Even in the video, the performance, you can see that. I think it is once Bond comes in, the sound changes. It becomes more the song that we're talking about now.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, this song to me, I mean, it has a little different vibe to it than AC/DC's regular vibe. But I know he says, "Can I sit next to you, girl?" a ton in that song. that's what I remember from that song, is that he says it a little much, I would say. But other than his voice, to me, that song is not following the same vibe as any other AC/DC songs.
Which is really interesting, you should say, because it's actually, so again, it was the first single. I think it was actually written by Angus and Malcolm in terms of songwriting. You know, obviously Bon handled the songwriting for the rest of the stuff. You know, song facts say about it, the song is about picking up a girl, much more innocent and subtle than we'd come to expect from AC/DC. And I think that's maybe it. There's definitely, you can tell that there's that lack of Bond's influence on the songwriting compared to, you know, the Jack or TNT or something like that.
Maybe that's why I'm not getting that vibe, is because, you know, it doesn't sound like something that he would write about. You know, I feel like he wouldn't write about, "Can I sit next to you, girl?" He'd be writing about, "I'm going to sit next to you, girl," is the way that I feel Bond might sing the lyrics to the song.
Exactly. I mean, Subjective Sound said of it, it's a great song, but it's Mark Evans' bass tracking that takes this song from a run-of-the-mill bluesy rock and roll tune to a killer rock song worthy of the AC/DC name. Again, we talked about his bass on Livewire. Do you think this is another song with a strong showing in terms of bass work?
Yeah, see, that's one thing that kind of caught my attention, you know, when I first heard the song. Even though I didn't like it when I first heard it, you know, with the bass, and I think it has a little hi-hat in it or something. I don't know. It's like, yeah, the bass on this song, yeah, it keeps the song driving, even though it's not one of my favorite songs. Like I said with Livewire, it definitely leads the song from beginning to the end. I can see where it turns it into a rock song because, you know, the bass is just sitting there just pushing the song, pushing to the end.
So our next two tracks are from the original High Voltage. So everything we've talked about so far came from TNT. These two come from the original High Voltage album. The first one we've talked about a little bit already is Little Lover. For both this track and the next one, George Young, obviously brother of Angus and Malcolm, and producing, he's on bass duties for both of these. So it gives all three of the Young brothers playing together on these songs. On this one, it's Tony Correnti on drums. Many have said that the original High Voltage doesn't stand up well against TNT. Do you feel like these two tracks, you know, we talked about them maybe standing out. You'd said there's maybe something a little bit different about these two tracks. I know you'd said She's Got Balls is probably one of your least favourites, if not your least favourite on the album.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my least favourite. I just like Little Lover because it's kind of like Ride On. It has a little slower groove to it, and that's something that, you know, that's something that you would never think that AC/DC would come out with, is a song that just kind of soothes your mind, you know, and it's just kind of slow and I guess a love song, I guess, kind of. But it's just something different. And yeah, I don't really have much to say about She's Got Boss. it's not really a pick of mine, but Little Lover is definitely a pick of mine just because it is so different and you wouldn't expect it from the band.
So do you think that's, because I guess that brings up an interesting question, do you think it's, you wouldn't expect it from the band because of the songs that we've been listening to? So does it kind of jump out on the album like, oh, this is different? Or do you think because, for ourselves, because obviously we weren't being born when this album came out, that it's because we have that benefit of kind of knowing and listening to it, it stands out even more?
I feel like the reason it stood out to me when I first heard it is because, you know, the first part of the album, you're just getting straight up driven rock and roll. I mean, you got Livewire, that's just a straight up mean rock and roll song, and It's a Long Way to the Top, and TNT, and then you just get to this song, and it don't even start like a rock song. Like, it starts more like a blues song, like a BB King song or something. And the lyrics, you know, he's talking about, you know, not being able to get a girl off his mind, but from the beginning of the album, you feel like he has every girl he wants, so why is he trying to get a girl off his mind? You know, he should be getting her. So that's why it kind of sticks out to me, because, you know, Bond's lyrics and the music are far-fledged from any other AC/DC song on this album.
And I think it's interesting, you know, the subjective sound set of it. You know, they like the song a lot. They said it's a shame it's not been more prominent throughout the years. Would you agree with that? Do you think that, you know, maybe it would have been interesting for kind of, you know, we're saying TNT gets played all the time. Do you think it might have been interesting for people to maybe heard Little Lover and heard another side of AC/DC, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, this day and time, I feel like Little Lover would get more plays than TNT on a rock and roll, or let's not say a rock and roll radio station. Let's just say on mainstream radio. I feel like more people these days, just because of how music's changed over the years, would get more satisfaction out of Little Lover. Because there's not a lot of people, especially here, you know, in the U.S., that really listen to good old rock and roll driven rock and roll music anymore. It's all about this slow, lovey-dovey country stuff, and I feel like Little Lover kind of relates to more of what people want to hear these days, rather than the thing that, you know, me and my bandmates and our fans really like.
So we'll talk a little bit about She's Got Balls. We'll start, I guess, with these. We've kind of sort of talked about them together a little bit, but this one was actually written about Bond's wife, Irene Thornton, who she'd complained he'd never written a song about her. So as Angus puts it in the book, AC/DC, Two Sides to Every Glory, Bond wrote She's Got Balls and she left him. So I'm sure there's more to it than that. But, you know, I do love that version of the story that, you know, she said, I haven't got a song. He's written something that maybe wasn't, I don't know, is it flattering? I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But either way, it sounds like she didn't like the song anyway.
I believe that, man. I mean, you know, I've heard the song plenty of times, even though it's not one of my favorites. I've heard it because I'm one of those people that'll turn an album on from beginning to end, just listen to it. But I could see where she doesn't like the song. I mean, I could see where he's talking about how she's maybe I don't know, like The Man or something. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but I could see her not liking it. That's actually quite hilarious.
And I think another story that I love about this as well, thinking about kind of another important woman in Bond's life, is that he would actually play songs, including She's Got Balls, to his mum. So he said in an interview at the time, when I listened to it back the next morning, I'd think, hey, did I say that? Did I think that? But out of it, you can usually get some pretty good stuff. I'd play it to my mum, and if she said, that's not very nice, I'd keep it. So this image of kind of Bond bringing in these songs about, you know, the Jack, She's Got Balls, TNT to an extent, bringing these songs in for her to listen to just to get a reaction. And if she didn't like it, yep, that's going on the album.
I love that as well, man. That is freaking hilarious.
I mean, on She's Got Balls, the band went with Peter Clack behind the drum kit, who I think was playing with them live a bit at the time. So Phil Rudd hadn't yet joined the band at this point, which, of course, again, that's something else that's very different about these two tracks that we've just been talking about. You know, do you think, you know, I always felt that like Phil has a very kind of unmistakable sound on drums. You know, do you think that there is something missing in that area on these two songs?
As simple as the drums are on most AC/DC songs, to me, being a guitar player, it really doesn't change the fact of me liking them more or less. But I think that he did a great job on these two songs. I enjoy the drums on Little Lover. I mean, I really do. I don't really, that's not what stands out to me on that song is the drums, but that's also because I'm a guitar player and, you know, I study more guitar than I do anything else, I guess.
I think another really interesting dynamic of these two tracks that we've been talking about, the earlier High Voltage ones, is that Angus and Mal at that time, they were actually kind of sharing lead and rhythm guitar responsibilities. So obviously, you know, throughout their career, it's always been Angus on lead, Mal on rhythm. That's just how it's always been. They hadn't quite got to that place yet on the original High Voltage. And so on these two songs, it is kind of a bit of interchange. And it wasn't really until the TNT sessions that dynamic that we all know and love kind of came into place. You know, how integral is that? Because again, we've talked about kind of the sound of the band, how important it is. I know that you'd said, you know, in your opinion, right at the start, you'd said Malcolm Young is one of, if not the best rhythm guitarist of all time. Is that dynamic between the two of them, is that what is so integral and so important, particularly in this kind of Bon Scott era of AC/DC?
Yeah, if it wasn't for Malcolm and Angus, the band would have never been, because to me, James Hetfield and Malcolm Young are the greatest rhythm players of all time. And I feel like it takes a good rhythm section to form a number one band because, you know, and of course, Angus, you know, he was a great lead player, but him and his brother also corresponded perfectly for the kind of music that they had created.
So let's move on to the final track, which is the title track, High Voltage. Now, again, just to confuse people even further, when we've been talking about two different High Voltage albums, the song High Voltage actually originally comes from TNT. So just to confuse people even more. This is allegedly the first song that Phil Rudd, who we've just been talking about, played on. It was a top 10 hit for the band in Australia. Adrian Denning says of High Voltage, the closing title song contains all the swagger and confidence that would later make AC/DC truly famous. What are your thoughts on High Voltage? You know, does it feel like a lift? We've had these two tracks. I know you'd said obviously She's Got Balls as your least favorite. Does High Voltage give us a lift as we get to the end of the album?
Yes. I mean, to me, it does. High Voltage was also one of my favorite songs on the album when I first heard it. I know I didn't mention that earlier, but this song was also one that stuck out to me because I feel like that's the way I felt in high school. You know, I ask about the clothes I wear and why I grow my hair. You know, I played ball in high school, you know, and it was weird that, you know, I started growing my hair and stuff, and I feel like that song kind of relates to me because I was asked, you know, all these questions about what's it like playing music for a living and all these things in high school because that wasn't the cool thing to do. You know, people wanted to be doctors and they wanted to be, you know, nurses and whatever else, but I really relate to this song, especially a younger me.
I mean, Sputnik Music praised High Voltage, saying the markedly upbeat High Voltage continues the cheek and attitude of the album in one of the band's most popular and enduring songs. The song describes the sound impeccably. High Voltage, rock and roll. The guitars are again simple and distorted, and the riff played under the solo gets the track flowing. You know, is it a good example? We've talked about this throughout. We've talked about Angus and Mal and this kind of synergy that, you know, we usually only talk about like siblings in terms of like how they harmonize vocally, but you know, today obviously it's more about guitar. Do you think this is another example of that, that partnership that we've talked so much about? Is High Voltage another good kind of example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little different than, you know, the rest of them, just because it's not that chucking, you know, palm muting thing that, you know, Malcolm usually does, but it's got that little high note. I do feel like they still have that chemistry, of course, you know, because they obviously do, but I do feel like it's a little different vibe as far as the guitar parts go until you get to the chorus. When you get to the chorus, then it's more like a regular AC/DC song, but the little ching-ching at the end of every fourth beat, I feel like it's a little different, you know, because they added that high note in there, which a lot of AC/DC songs were more just straight-up power chords on the low end of the guitar. And then they've got this, you know, high note coming in here that gives it more of like a major. And when I say major, I mean like a, you know, on the guitar, like a major chord. It gives it more of a happy sound as far as the music goes.
So in terms of it being like a closer for the album, how does High Voltage end the album for you?
For me, it ends it perfectly, because I feel like that song kind of wraps up what AC/DC is as a whole. They are High Voltage rock and roll. AC/DC is one of them bands you put on your Bluetooth speaker and you turn it to 11 or whatever the highest you can go. It ends the album out well, because he starts off by saying it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. And then by the end of the album, he's telling people what he went through as, you know, a rock and roll player. He got asked all these questions, and yeah, I feel like it's a great statement for the end of the album.
Absolutely. Rolling Stone may have bashed it kind of in the day, but that hasn't stopped it becoming this hugely influential, hugely classic album. I'd say it's probably, in one way or another, influenced pretty much every rock and metal band that have followed. Allmusic.com praised the album's legacy, saying there are songs about rock and roll, slow sleazy blues, High Voltage boogie, double entendres, so obvious they qualify as single entendres, and of course the monster riffs of Angus Young. So big and bold, they bruise the listener upon contact. This is music so primal that it's enduring. It feels like it existed before AC/DC got there, and it will exist long afterward. With that in mind, why has High Voltage stood the test of time for you?
Because it's just that simple rock and roll music, but it's so great. Like, they've got that blues thing going on, they've got that rock thing going on, but they're different than where blues and rock started at, I guess, because of their where they lived and how they grew up and where they started the band at in the first place.
And finally, why is High Voltage your classic album, and why should people check it out if they haven't already?
Well, people should check it out because I feel like this day and time, everybody's stuck on the things that have came out over the past 2 or 3 years, when people really need to go back and dig, because that's where you're going to find your great music that all these rockers listen to. And I'm glad that I was raised on this kind of music, but I really picked High Voltage Rock and Roll because I feel like that album there is not, I feel like it's not listened to enough. I feel like Back in Black is more listened to. Maybe Highway to Hell, people know more music off those, but this is their first album. And it's one of their greatest albums. I feel like everyone should go listen to it. And that's why I chose it, because it's kind of shied away from as far as AC/DC goes.
Well, Riley, thank you so much for joining us to talk about High Voltage Day. It's been awesome. I know I'm really excited about the Georgia Thunderbolts. And obviously you've been touring with like Blackstone Cherry and the Kentucky Headhunters and all of these kinds of bands. What's kind of in your future? I know you did say you've recently signed with Mascot. Is that right?
Yeah, we signed with Mascot back in June. You know, they decided to release an EP. We were going to release a full-length album, but considering the virus and everything, they let us do an EP, which I'm very grateful for, because it could have been a year or two before we got to release a full-length album with everything going on, the pandemic and everything. So we're very blessed. And, yeah, I mean, we got some shows coming up in Texas, Tennessee, you know, and hopefully we get to play them, you know, hopefully they don't get canceled. We had a lot of shows canceled in 2020, but let's just hope and pray that everything goes our way this year. And if it does, we're going to be like a train rolling, just adding coals to the fire, baby.
Pandemic withstanding, there any plans to get over to the UK?
Actually, yes, there is. As mentioned in Classic Rock Magazine, we are planning on heading to the UK this year. And Lord willing, you know, it's going to happen. We're going to get to go over there because we have a lot of fans that we've got really close interaction with, and we've spoke a lot to. You know, I met a lot of them in Atlanta at the Blackberry Smoke Show, and they're ecstatic about us coming over and playing in the UK and as well as we are.
Big thanks to Ryder Kuzort for joining me today to chat about AC/DC's High Voltage. Really, really pleased that we managed to get Riley on the show and get this sorted. It's been an absolute pleasure just dealing with the Georgia Thunderbolts in general, getting all of this sorted, you know. So yeah, absolutely. These guys are a band to watch. Absolutely check them out. Thoroughly recommended. I know a lot of their fans, they've got a real loyal fan base. I know a lot of them are listening today. If this is your first time hearing the Georgia Thunderbolts, hearing Looking for an Old Friend and you enjoyed it, check out that EP. It's out now through Mascot Records. You know, Riley was saying they're hoping to get over to the UK. They're hoping to do a first album. You know, let's get all of this kind of COVID business out of the way and let's get back to live music. Let's get back to everything. And, you know, really excited. If those guys come to town, you can guarantee that I'll be there. So absolutely come and say hi if you do see me. So we're going to do something that we've never really done before in the whole time that we've done My Classic Album. It's a case of like when you're waiting for a bus and two come along at once. So usually, you know, things are pretty spaced out. So, you know, we've done two Kiss albums, we've done two Queen albums, we've done two Blink 182 albums, but those episodes were quite far apart. As I was talking to Riley about High Voltage, he told me that his second favourite album, as you'll remember at the beginning, was Highway to Hell. As I was having my conversations with Riley, I was also talking with friend of the show Damon Johnson, who many of you will know from Black Star Riders, Alice Cooper, Brother Kane. He talked about Synchronicity a couple of years ago, one of my favourite episodes we've ever done, and Damon is coming back on the show, but this time he's talking about Highway to Hell. So I know Riley was really happy because he was kind of torn between the two, so we're just going to do them in one go. Let's bookend Bon Scott's career. We've done High Voltage. In a couple of weeks, we'll do Highway to Hell. Why not? Let's just go for it. So that's going to be happening in just a couple of weeks' time. If you didn't hear the Synchronicity episode with Damon, absolutely go back and listen to it on myclassicalbum.co.uk. It is absolutely one of my favourite episodes that we've done. So I'm really, really excited to get Damon back. So that's coming in just a couple of weeks' time. Staying on the AC/DC train. I've been Mike Norris, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks on the Highway to Hell. Cheers.